Okay, Matt, when was the last time you were fired?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's going on here? This doesn't feel good for me.
I thought they told you.
Oh, no. Don't even joke about it. It's horrible. I mean, I have had rejections in my life. I remember writing to Granada Studios as a kid asking to be on Coronation Street, and they wrote back a lovely, long no.
I knew there was a deep sadness in your life. Well, channeling that, you will absolutely know what it's like when you've been caught in charge of a massive illegal phone hacking operation that's industrial in scale.
Yes, it was the exact same feeling.
26th of January 2007, Wapping, London. News of the World editor Andy Coulson knows what's coming as he enters Les Hinton's office. It's not good. Les is News International's CEO, and he's watching TV footage of Clive Goodman and Glenn Mulcair being transported from court in police vans. Private investigator Mulcair has been sent to prison for 6 months. He's charged with hacking the phones of five celebrities. He isn't a News International employee, so the company has been able to distance itself from his actions. Clive Goodman was the royal correspondent for the News of the World. But he's come good. He's told police he acted alone. He was the only reporter at the paper who hacked phones.
Yeah, let's see how long that lasts.
Les turns off the TV and turns to face him. Andy's palms become sweaty. Listen, Andy, you know I've always liked you, but you're toxic now. You have to go. Andy thinks about fighting it. He won't be a scapegoat. But he knows News International can be a great friend or a bitter enemy. He weighs it up, makes a decision. Okay, but I want to be looked after. A few hours later, Andy makes his way from the paper's Wapping headquarters for the last time.
Makes it sound like the headquarters are massive, from their Wapping headquarters. It's a place in London if you've not been there.
Andy ignores the press's pleas for a comment. He gets straight into his car. He sits back, exhales. No doubt the News of the World's rivals are enjoying this. He won't give them the satisfaction of a quote. It's not all bad. He's got a generous severance package, 3 years full pay. But what now? He turns 39 tomorrow. He's lost his dream job. The chances of another editor's job after this are slim to nil. Andy won't be beaten, though. He doesn't know how he's going to bounce back from this, but he's determined he's not finished yet.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From Wondery, I'm Alice Levine.
And I'm Matt Ford.
And this is British Scandal. Now, Matt, there was so much sensation at the start of this story.
Yes, sensation and good old-fashioned British tabloid filth.
So the News of the World was the UK's best-selling newspaper, and in 2006 it was rocked by the discovery that royal editor Clive Goodman and private investigator Glenn Mulcair had intercepted private calls between Princes William and Harry.
calls which contain shocking, titillating and appalling details about Prince William's knee.
We all remember where we were that day.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. News International were convinced that if Goodman and Mulcair accepted full responsibility and editor Andy Coulson resigned, the company could just wash its hands of the matter and move on.
But it didn't quite pan out like that, did it?
Lucky for this podcast, no. The scandal was far from over. This is episode 2, Turning the Screws. It's January 2007, a week since Coulson's resignation. In a vast mansion in the Cotswolds, Rebecca Brooks stands in a grand dining room. A waiter tops up her glass of champagne as she chats to one of her closest girlfriends, Liz Murdoch.
Liz Murdoch, daughter of Rupert?
Yes, exactly. And typically well-connected, Liz runs her own production company. She's also married to Matthew Freud, a big London PR guru. The couple are part of what's become known as the Chipping Norton set. This is the country's power elite. Politicians, public officials, celebrities, all part of the same gang. Most of them have massive houses in this wealthy part of Oxfordshire, which is famed for its stunning scenery and cosy country pubs.
I can personally vouch that. Chipping Norton's pubs are amazing. The Chequers, the Kings, the Blue Boar, the Crown and Cushion and the Fox. Sadly, I've never really noticed the scenery.
Wow.
Go there every Christmas for a pub crawl.
That's not a crawl, that's a marathon. Across the room, Jeremy Clarkson raises his glass to Rebecca. They know each other already. As well as presenting Top Gear, Clarkson writes a column for The Sun. Rebecca has been The Sun's editor for 4 years. She's almost as well connected as Liz. She's equally feared and revered by politicians and celebrities alike. But she's feeling the loss of close confidant Andy Coulson from the News of the World. And her personal life isn't good. She's getting a divorce from Ross Kemp.
I wonder who'll get custody of the suit of armour. Probably argue they want the other one to have it. No, you keep it.
I think about that nightly.
Rebecca's a bit of an outsider with this lot. She networks away as always, but she can't deny there's something missing. Then she spots an unfamiliar figure in the corner. A handsome, slightly portly, 43-year-old with brown hair. He looks Rebecca's way, gives her a smile. She blushes.
Before you ask, it's not me.
43, you wish.
Rebecca turns to Liz. Who's that? Liz tells Rebecca his name is Charlie. He breeds and trains horses. Very Chipping Norton.
Yeah.
Oh, and his brother went to school with none other than the new leader of the Conservative Party, David Cameron. Rebecca's usually researched every guest at a party. She likes to be armed with all the relevant information, ready to press the right buttons. But if she's going to get to know this guy, she's going to have to do it the old-fashioned way. Charlie, this is Rebecca. Charlie shakes Rebecca's hand enthusiastically. He tells her he trains horses.
Really?
She says. She's always wanted to learn to ride.
Which means something very different in the News of the World.
What a great chat-up line.
Yeah.
Come on. I don't encounter people from the equestrian world very often, so I can't use that.
It's 2 months later at a swanky West London restaurant. Andy Coulson sits down to lunch with George Osborne. He's the Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, number two to David Cameron. The Conservative leader is the party's new hope for victory at the next general election. If he wins, it will end a run of more than 10 years in power for Labour. But victory for Cameron is by no means assured. Rupert Murdoch and his papers still support the Labour Prime Minister, Gordon Brown. Since 1979, no British government has been elected without Murdoch's support. It will take someone with expertise in dealing with the press and inside influence to tip the balance towards the Tories. Coulson's pretty sure that's why Osborne wants to meet him today. There are rumours of a senior job going on the party's communications team.
This is only 2 months after Coulson left the News of the World, so this meeting could be taking place in Stringfellows over a bottle of Sambuca and 3 grams of MDMA.
That's business. Coulson is as surprised as anyone, and he's not even sure he should entertain the idea. He promised his wife, Eloise, that he'd spend more time with the kids at their family home in Dulwich. No more late nights and weekends working.
I've heard great things about you, Andy.
Coulson grins. But before they go any further, there's just one more thing Osborne wants to check. All I need to know is, Did anything happen at the paper that could harm us? Anything you had knowledge of that was illegal, for example? Can you be more specific?
Depends what you mean.
When you say illegal, do you mean like against the law, sure?
Yeah, in the literal sense, or just like in general?
Andy pauses before answering.
How long for? So for about 3 hours. Just remembering them all. It's going to take me ages.
He thinks of all the people Mulcair was found guilty of hacking. If anyone looks into it further, he could face some very difficult questions. But it's a big if, and Andy's been okay so far. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Getting Cameron elected will be a challenge, but the spoils if he succeeds will be huge. A job at Number 10, and even more power than he had as a newspaper editor. Andy doesn't need to think for long. No, Clive Goodman said it himself. He acted alone. Osborne shrugs. In that case, we have nothing to worry about. He holds out his hand. Deal? This time, there's no hesitation from Andy. Deal. Andy's old motto, whatever it takes, still stands. Now, he's going to use it to get the Conservatives running the country.
You know what? I think this is all going to work out fine.
I really love that that was his due diligence. Is there anything I need to know about? Nope. Cool. Hired.
Such a leading question. You didn't do anything wrong, did you? No.
March 2008. Max Mosley hears his wife Jean's footsteps on the stairs. He braces himself. This is going to be difficult. The 68-year-old is staring at today's News of the World front page. The headline screams, Formula One boss in sick Nazi orgy with five hookers. And that Formula One boss is Max. There aren't that many Formula One bosses, are there? Because you'd be like, it might not be me.
It's me all burning.
He's been at the kitchen table looking at it for what feels like hours. Max has no idea how to explain this to Jean. Now he's running out of time. She comes into the kitchen, sleepily rubbing her eyes. Why didn't you wake me? Max realises there are no words. All he can do is show Jean the paper. He pushes it into her line of vision, waits for the explosion. But instead, she starts laughing.
That would not be my first reaction.
No, mine neither. Jean thinks he's had the page mocked up as a joke.
Like a Moonpig card.
Oh, God.
Happy birthday.
They are funny. Max is stony-faced, though. Soon the truth dawns on Jean. The laughter abruptly stops. They're 2 years off their golden wedding anniversary, but she'd never known about this part of his life until now. Jean sits down looking dazed, trying to process it. He tells her yes, he's been to orgies. He's into sadomasochism. He has been for years, but the Nazi stuff is all bollocks.
Yes, I've been cheating on you for years in sadomasochistic sex dungeons, but the most important thing is I wasn't wearing the jacket they say I was. You have to believe me, Jean! I would never wear that jacket when I was cheating on you.
I just don't know what to say. Max realises this is hardly the moment for splitting hairs, but he can't stand the fact that the paper has added that detail. His father was Oswald Mosley, the leader of the British Union of Fascists, but that was his father. Max doesn't want to be associated with Nazis sexually or otherwise. Which is a sentence I never thought I'd say in my life.
I mean, he had been an election agent for his dad's fascist party when he was young, so there was a bit of history there.
Yes, and it obviously makes for a better story to add a twist like that. Max knows there are two people who will be even more mortified by this than his wife, their sons. Their eldest, Alexander, in particular. He's a recovering drug addict, and he's recently been doing well in treatment. Who knows what effect this will have on him? Jean storms out. Max doesn't try to stop her. The least he can do is give her some space. He picks up the paper and stares at the front page. Why should a newspaper have the right to go into his private premises and secretly film consenting adults? Let alone add in its own libelous details. No doubt the editor thinks Max will be too ashamed to fight back. He's not sure what he's going to do yet, but Max is certain of one thing. The News of the World has just made an enemy.
It's a good job he wasn't a fascist at that point, because they make formidable enemies.
It's a year later, June 2009, somewhere near Chipping Norton. A massive marquee stands in the grounds of a large country estate. It's surrounded by trees and a great lake spanning 350 metres. At the far end sits an 18th century boathouse, disguised as a Doric temple. Bentleys and Mercedes line the nearby road, their chauffeurs baking in the sun. A band and a full funfair keep several hundred guests entertained. It's Rebecca Brooks's wedding.
A News of the World wedding. Imagine the canapes. Jack Daniel's souffle on a bed of cocaine.
And what a guest list. Britain's Prime Minister Gordon Brown and various cabinet ministers mingle with Chipping Norton residents such as Madonna's ex, Guy Ritchie, and newspaper executives like Piers Morgan. On the other side of the field, Tony Blair's former spokesman, Alistair Campbell, chats away to Andy Coulson, now in his new job as David Cameron's head of press. The wedding ceremony begins. The bride arrives to the sound of Handel's Rejoice, and she wears a white designer two-piece, just about the only thing at this ceremony that's understated. As the reception begins, she throws her arms around the man who's made it all possible.
The horse trainer Charlie Brooks.
No, Rupert Murdoch.
Of course.
Rupert is more to Rebecca than just her boss of 20 years. She's come to see him as something of a father figure. Even today, she can't resist talking shop. There's only one wedding gift she wants from Rupert, a promotion.
Do get me a promotion on my wedding day. If you loved me, you would.
Last year, he made his son, James Murdoch, chairman of the company. Rebecca's heard rumours Rupert might move his trusty chief executive, Les Hinton, to New York. That would leave a vacancy, the top job at News International in London, overseeing all four papers, The Sun, The News of the World, The Times and The Sunday Times. She's dreamt of it her whole career. She's now so close she can almost smell the ink. Rebecca gestures towards David Cameron, who laughs with other guests nearby. She tells Murdoch how well she's getting along with the Tory leader. Rebecca hints Cameron could be helpful too if he becomes PM. Rupert is bidding for full control of satellite TV company B Sky B. He'll need the support of the government when the time comes. She moves her attention to Gordon Brown. He looks like he'd rather be anywhere else but here.
Always did.
Rebecca adds, Labour's grip on number 10 might be over. Time to back a different horse.
She's already sounding like her husband.
You're better than that.
Rebecca tries to sound casual with her next question. Chosen Les's successor yet? Rupert smiles enigmatically. Tells Rebecca he's mulling it over, the top job and the next election. He walks away. Rebecca realises she's not getting everything she wanted today. Rebecca vows that the top job will be hers. And when she gets it, nothing is going to make her let it go. On the same day as Rebecca's wedding in King's Cross, London, Nick Davies hurries through The Guardian's newsroom. The 58-year-old investigative journalist has been working in isolation. A year ago, he was given a tip-off by a disgruntled News of the World employee. It sent him down a rabbit hole of covert meetings in hotel rooms and endless confidential documents. Now, he's here to see The Guardian's editor, Alan Rusbridger. As Nick enters Alan's glass-fronted office, the pair greet each other warmly. Nick hands him a shop-bought sandwich, lunch, as promised.
I think I prefer the News of the World diet.
Alan opens it and invites Nick to take a seat. With a nervous backwards glance, Nick closes the door. He takes some notebooks out of his satchel. Then he launches into what he's discovered. Phone hacking at the News of the World wasn't the random act of one rogue reporter. No kidding, we all know that. Proving it is something else. Nick goes on. What if we can? Not only that, what if we could prove it was authorised by a whole network at the paper? This was widespread, systematic criminality, thousands of phones hacked on a regular basis. And it happened with the full knowledge of the editor at the time, Andy Coulson.
That extra element is what makes it such a delicious story for The Guardian, because it's a big enough deal anyway, but now Coulson is right-hand man to David Cameron, who's about to become Prime Minister.
Right, and Nick's not done. He goes on to tell Alan that the Metropolitan Police knew about it all, but covered it up.
Wow.
Rusbridger asks the big question. Sources?
What, for the sandwich?
Always brown. Nick tells him the truth. They're rock solid, but the paper can't name them. Let me get this straight. You want me to start a war with the largest news organisation in the country, the largest police force and the largest political party based on evidence we can't produce?
Yeah.
Nick eyeballs him, holding his nerve. He knows how unforgiving the Murdoch papers can be. There's no doubt they'll come after them. They'll try every trick in the book to discredit them. But Nick thinks that's all the more reason to publish. Murdoch's titles spend their time moralising to the nation, all the while breaking the law themselves. They've had it their way for far too long. Finally, Alan tosses his sandwich on the desk. OK, let's do it.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
It's the 9th of July, 2009, a month later. Rebecca Brooks slams a copy of The Guardian down on her desk. This is the second day of the broadsheet's explosive revelations, an expose of a culture of phone hacking at the News of the World. There are also claims that the Metropolitan Police found evidence of hundreds more potential hacking victims, then did nothing. The suggestion is it happened because of the Met's cozy relationship with News International. It's not what Rebecca needs right now. Rupert Murdoch came good. She was made CEO of the company just days after her wedding.
What a start. Here's your new office. It's on fire.
Exactly. This is Rebecca, though. She's got a plan. The Guardian reports by Nick Davies don't name their sources. There's no concrete proof. The way Rebecca sees it, they just have to hold their nerve. But one problem remains. The Metropolitan Police has asked Assistant Commissioner John Yates to look into whether the police have suppressed evidence. Rebecca knows Yates, but she has no idea what he's going to do about this. If the police reopen their investigation, there will be very difficult questions to answer. That morning, Yates addresses the press pack outside Scotland Yard. I was not involved in the original case and clearly came to this with an independent mind. He states the Guardian's reports that thousands of victims were hacked is not right. It was only a small number. The whole case has been the object of the most careful investigation by very experienced detectives. He can see no reason to reopen their inquiry. Back in Wapping, Rebecca allows herself to relax. Without further investigation by Scotland Yard, this story will burn itself out. She really doesn't need this distraction at the moment. There's a general election coming, and her boss, Rupert Murdoch, still needs to decide who to back. She's pushing harder than ever for David Cameron. If they can get him elected, it'll help their own agenda no end, and this Guardian business will be no more than a minor blip.
Yeah.
If. Big if.
Mm-hmm.
It's May 2010, the morning after the election. Andy Coulson walks into his new office at number 10 Downing Street. He's helped David Cameron's Conservatives into power. Something's niggling at Andy, though. These phone hacking stories The Guardian keeps printing. Andy's old mate Rebecca has done some admirable firefighting. Without named sources, the stories can't get far. But now he's heard rumours The Guardian's editor, Alan Rusbridger, has brought in The New York Times to help. Its reporters are sniffing around several old colleagues of his.
You should just ask them questions instead. Smells guilty to me. Get him.
He knows any more negative stories could reflect badly. What would have been embarrassing while the Tories were in opposition could be catastrophic now they're in government. Andy knows what he should do. Walk away now. He told his wife, Eloise, he would only stay until the election. If the campaign was keeping him busy, his boss being PM will only make him busier. Putting his family first is the perfect excuse for Andy to get out quietly, leaving everyone's reputation intact.
Exactly, that is the sensible thing to do.
Off your pop. But then, Cameron has just offered him a new job as Director of Communications. If he walks away now, he'll be missing out on the job of a lifetime. More than that, his chance to play a part in history. He believes in the policies the Conservatives got elected on. He can make real changes in this job.
Oh, he's talking himself into it.
He looks around at his new surroundings, the seat of power.
That's just a normal office chair, but help yourself.
He makes his decision. He'll take his chances, let The Guardian keep coming for him. With the support of Rebecca at his old stomping ground and the PM here in Westminster, Andy's feeling pretty invincible. It's August 2010. In his local off-licence, Sean Hoare pays the cashier and leaves.
So this is the cocaine for breakfast guy that got sacked in the last episode?
Exactly, but he's been on the wagon for months. But today he's cracked and bought himself a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Oh no.
Back home, Sean checks his wife is still out. He sticks the bottle down on the table in front of him, feeling conflicted. Why did he even get it? But when Sean turns the TV news on, he's reminded. Walking behind David Cameron as he leaves the Commons is Sean's old pal, Andy Coulson. He looks better than ever.
Oh, that must sting.
Like crazy. Sometimes Sean feels lucky to have left the paper when he did, but he's felt adrift these last few years. It strikes him that plenty of Coulson's old team haven't done so well. Some have been driven out of their jobs, like him, or they've taken the rap instead of the people at the top, like Clive Goodman. Sean mutes the TV and takes out his phone. He plays the message left for him yesterday. It's from a New York Times reporter.
Hi, Sean. I've been passed your number by a source at the News of the World. They think you might be prepared to go on record about the practice of phone hacking when you were there. If that's correct, could you call me back?
End of message.
Was that the actual message? That sounded... I genuinely thought that was a taped recording.
To the American listeners, I can only apologise.
Sean's played it over and over, and he can't decide what to do. But Sean might hate himself more if he ignores what Coulson's done to Goodman. What he'll probably do to any other reporters who threaten to blow his saintly image. He grabs the bottle of Jack Daniels. He unscrews the cap, takes it into the kitchen and pours the whole lot down the sink. Then he picks up his mobile.
It's Sean Hoare. I want to go on record. Phone hacking didn't just happen at the News of the World. It was actively encouraged by Andy Coulson.
And how does the guy at the New York Times react when he hears this?
No way!
Holy smokes! I got myself a scoop.
Let's go for a hot dog and discuss it.
And get me those pictures of Spider-Man.
September 2010. Nick Davies leads Mark Lewis into the back room of a cafe in Knightsbridge. The 42-year-old lawyer walks with a limp due to having multiple sclerosis. He's one of the toughest people Nick knows. He's also the man who's been suing News International on behalf of victims of hacking. The pair have been meeting regularly since Davies' first hacking story was published. They're sometimes joined by other members of a growing anti-News International alliance. Their gang includes actors Steve Coogan and Hugh Grant, and long-term Brooks nemesis and Labour MP, Tom Watson.
Imagine seeing that lot in the pub. Oh my God, it's Hugh Grant and Alan Partridge and... Oh, is that a Labour MP? What's he doing there?
It's quite the I'm a Celebrity lineup, isn't it? They may come from very different worlds, but they have one thing in common. They all suspect they've been victims of the dark arts practiced by the News of the World. But despite their growing number, they're hitting brick walls at every turn. Sean Hoare's testimony appeared in the New York Times earlier this month, but still it hasn't had much effect. The police investigation run by John Yates seems to be going at snail's pace too. No matter how much ammunition their enemies produce, nothing is sticking to News International. That's why Nick asked Mark to come down from his Manchester office today. He wants to introduce him to someone. Mark, this is Max Mosley. After the Nazi orgy story, Max took the News of the World to court, and he won. £60,000 in damages. Sadly, there's a sting in the tail. Not long after the verdict, his son Alexander died from a drugs overdose. Max believes it was a direct result of the stress caused by the News of the World story. Nick gives Mark a knowing nod. This is his cue. The thing is, we've got hundreds of victims wanting to take legal action over these phone hacks, but they haven't got the cash to go up against the likes of News International and the Met. So Nick and I wondered if you could contribute. Max doesn't hesitate. Consider me a blank check. I'll underwrite the costs, as much as you like. Call it your fighting fund.
Amazing.
Nick stares at Max, hardly daring to believe it. He told Mark that Mosley might be able to put a few thousand their way, but they hadn't expected any more than that. But Max's expression is serious. Formula One has made him very rich. He also has a sizable inheritance. And he can't think of anything better to spend it on. Nick and Mark look at each other. The fight is far from over.
Can I just say, if any generous billionaires with large inheritances are listening, and I'm sure I speak for you as well, Alice, we're happy to accept your blank checks.
I don't care how you've made your money.
January 2011, Belgravia. Andy Coulson knows a thing or two about discreet meetings with Rebecca Brooks. So picking a quiet hotel this morning wasn't hard, but he gets the feeling their conversation will be. Rebecca greets Andy warmly, but there's no fooling him that this is anything other than business. Andy places a copy of The Guardian in front of her.
I'm guessing you wanted to see me about this.
The latest story is about how the film star Sienna Miller's phone was hacked. This time, the trail goes further back than just the investigator Glenn Mulcair.
And Mulcair was the guy at the start of the first episode who gets arrested and has that office full of whiteboards and files and loads of incriminating evidence.
Absolutely, and up until now, the party line was that it was just Glenn Mulcair acting alone. But this leads back to the News of the World reporter Ian Edmondson, who told him to hack Sienna. Andy's not too concerned, though.
You can take care of it, right?
Rebecca shakes her head. It's not that simple. Edmondson reported to Andy when he was editor. He would have authorised everything they did. The trail leads directly to him. Rebecca tells him he needs to take full responsibility. He needs to resign from his job at Downing Street.
The hunter becomes the hunted.
Andy's eyes widen in disbelief. Does she realise what she's asking? Rebecca obviously does. She can barely look at him.
You're screwed whatever you do. You'll be an embarrassment to the government. Cameron will be forced to sack you.
The affair's over then.
Andy can't believe it. Once again, he's the fall guy, and she comes out of it unscathed. But he knows he's cornered. If he doesn't resign now, she's right. It's only a matter of time before Cameron sacks him. He took a gamble that the dark arts of the News of the World would stay hidden. He lost. For the second time, it will cost him his job. But with the pressure on the police to investigate further, he can only hope that's the only price he has to pay.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
It's April the 8th, 2011, 3 months after Andy Coulson has resigned from Downing Street. At News International HQ in Wapping, Rebecca Brooks stands in front of a whiteboard. The words escape map are scrawled at the top.
Oh my God, is this going to go full Shawshank?
The scandal has reached a critical point. Two News of the World execs have been arrested. Max Mosley is bankrolling a judicial review against the Met police. More evidence of wrongdoing at the paper is coming to light every week. And there are rumours Scotland Yard is planning to launch a new investigation. Plus, it means the B-Sky B deal she told Rupert Murdoch would be so simple is now hanging in the balance. This whole mess is affecting Murdoch where it hurts the most, the bottom line. Rebecca turns to two of the company's senior managers, Will Lewis and Simon Greenberg. OK, talk me through. Will Lewis draws her attention to the left-hand side of the whiteboard. They've listed all the things that need to be done if the company is going to survive. Hand incriminating evidence over to the Met Police. Bring in an independent investigator for an internal inquiry. Give clear evidence to select committees.
OK, what's option B?
Is there a delete files option?
Yeah, can we just not do that?
Control-Alt-Del? Simon Greenberg takes over. He points to the middle section. These are the worst-case outcomes. Other News International titles being investigated? A company-wide investigation by police. The News of the World closing. Rebecca gasps. Surely it won't come to that. Her eyes move to the right-hand column. It's headed in capital letters, Main Street. Underneath are a list of names. Rebecca recognises them as victims of crime. What does that mean? Lewis tells her if there are any more nasty surprises, such as the discovery that any of those people were hacked, the situation could go Main Street. It would be unmanageable. Emergency meeting concluded. Rebecca knows what she has to do. She gets on the phone to company chairman James Murdoch.
What's the plan?
Well, we take full responsibility for the hacking claims. We make a clear admission that we now know crime at the News of the World was widespread under Andy Coulson. And we hand over any embarrassing email evidence to the police.
It's a nuclear option, but Rebecca will do anything to avoid Main Street.
Especially that time of day, the traffic's awful. So, what were the names listed under Main Street?
Well, we're getting to that. It's a week later, April 2011, Wapping. Police officers swarm into the News of the World's offices. Staff look up, confused, as the police block the exits. Deputy Assistant Commissioner Sue Akers walks in and looks around. 55 years old, with a greying bob and no-nonsense demeanour, she asks the nearest person to direct her to the desk of reporter James Weatherup. She's the Met's head of organised crime and criminal networks. John Yates is off the case. He's been roundly criticised for failing to investigate fully. Now Sue Akers is leading Scotland Yard's new investigation into phone hacking, Operation Wheating. Akers tells her officers to search Weatherup's desk and bag everything up as evidence. But there's a problem. The desk is empty. It's already been cleared. Akers knew this wouldn't be easy, but she didn't expect the company to be this obstructive.
It's just so unsubtle. Yeah, he's gone. He got an early flight and burnt all his stuff. Not sure if that helps.
He helped you out. He's put some police tape round his own desk. The journalists around her all sheepishly avoid eye contact. It doesn't take Columbo to work out there's been a tip-off that he'd been arrested at home. I mean, obviously, it does take Columbo because I didn't understand. But Akers has been in the force for 30 years, and she's not about to let a bunch of reporters get the better of her. Get the company's lawyer down here now.
Oh, I like her. She's not taking any crap.
If you needed the help of the police, you'd definitely want her running the show. 20 minutes later, she's facing off with the lawyer.
Why is News International withholding evidence?
The lawyer insists they're cooperating fully.
If this is cooperation, you don't know the meaning of the word.
Let me make myself perfectly clear. Weatherup has been named in evidence seized from the raid on Glen Mulcair.
If you don't hand over the contents of Weatherup's desk, we'll arrest you for obstruction.
Yes.
An hour later, Akers and her team leave with several black bin bags full of evidence. Akers hopes she sent these jokers a message. Unlike her predecessor on this case, John Yates, Akers has no interest in making friends. She has no appetite for fancy lunches with the likes of Rebecca Brooks. She won't be dicked around. This investigation will be carried out by the book, and woe betide anyone who tries to get in her way.
Brilliant.
June 2011. Nick Davies puts the phone down, his heart pounding so hard he thinks it might burst from his chest.
Has he had Coke for breakfast as well?
He's just received a tip-off from a source on Operation Wheating. If what he's been told is true, his next story could finally cause the fireworks they've been waiting for. But he has to be sure. There's too much at stake. Nick turns to his computer and searches for archive copies of the News of the World from March and April 2002. After a short scan, he finds what he's looking for. It's seemingly unimportant, a 300-word story buried on page 30, but it's exactly what Nick was hoping to see. A few hours later, Nick's in a bar in Farringdon near the Guardian offices. The editor, Alan Rusbridger, walks in. What's so urgent? Nick pulls Alan towards a table and sits him down. He does the familiar glance over his shoulder. He lowers his voice.
I love that he does the glance over the shoulder.
It seems like an inefficient way of checking if someone's listening. I'll just check over the left shoulder, that's all we need.
I've still got a few things to check out, but it's looking likely the News of the World hacked Millie Dowler's phone in 2002 before she was found dead.
Whoa.
And that is pretty much Alan's reaction too. Millie Dowler was the missing schoolgirl who was found murdered in 2002, and it gets worse. They may even have messed with the investigation by deleting messages from her voicemail account. And this all happened when Rebecca Brooks was editor and Andy Coulson was her deputy. The pair stare at each other, hardly able to take it in. It's the break they've been waiting for. It's going to change everything.
Two more pints over here, mate.
This is the second episode in our series, The Murdoch Phone Hacking. In the episode notes, you'll find some links and offers from our sponsors. Please support them. By supporting them, you help us offer you this show for free.
Another way to support us is to answer a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
A quick note about our dialogue. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said, but all of our dramatisations are based on historical research.
If you'd like to know more about this story, we especially recommend the books Hack Attack by Nick Davies, Beyond Contempt by Peter Dukes, and The News Machine by Glenn Mulcair and James Hanning.
I'm Alice Levine.
And I'm Matt Ford. Wendy Granditer wrote this episode. Additional writing by Alice Levine and Matt Ford. Our sound design is by Rich Ward. Our senior producer is Russell Finch. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens and Marshall Louis for Wondery.
Hello, Prime members. You can listen to British Scandal ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.